council meeting to order, are you then going to read the...
Yes, the statement of, the special note to the public. I will do that, yeah. Okay, ready? Everyone set? Got it. Okay. All right, good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Passion, and we're going to be calling the Story County Board of Health meeting today. And it is now called to order. There's a special note that I wish to read. Due to the recommendations to limit gatherings to no more than 10 people in order to help slow the spread of coronavirus, public access to this meeting has to be limited, so people will be able to listen via conference call. And if anyone in the public would like to call, they can dial in 918-221-0224 and enter this number, 222-5929-465-pound. Okay? And we request that if you do call in, that you mute your phone if possible. Okay? All right. Also, keep in mind that an audio recording of this meeting will be available to the public and will be posted. Okay, so call the meeting to order. And the first thing we're going to do is approval of the agenda. And there is a there is an addition to the agenda that I'd like to have approved by the Board of Health. This is to discuss consideration of the revised temporary employment practices and policy related to COVID-19 and any future amendments made to the temporary policy by the Board of Supervisors. The reason that we're adding this on to the agenda is that the Board of Supervisors just approved it later this morning. And because this is kind of an emergency situation, we'd like to add this to the agenda for discussion. Okay? So that's my proposal. Is there any further discussion of the Board of Health or any questions about this?
No.
Right, no questions. So I need approval to add this to the agenda. All those in favor? Move. Okay.
Second.
All those
aye.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Now the public forum. This is the time for members of the public who are currently on phone to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health tonight. Okay? Nothing? All right. Very good. Now, off to our items. First thing we're going to do is we're going to discuss and consider the proper procedure for the Board of Health to vote, notify, and enforce isolation and quarantine emergency orders concerning COVID-19 during this public health crisis. We have had some Iowa, a couple of code sent to us, and also the regulations concerning quarantine, okay? And we have to help us with this discussion, Ethan Anderson, Story County Board of Health.
Yeah, County Attorney's Office. Yeah.
County Attorney.
Thank you.
Okay, well, it's almost like you're a member of
right,
the Board
part
of Health.
Right,
okay, so the whole this discussion is to decide how we do an emergency order if one becomes necessary. I think the only time I think it may become necessary is if we have someone in quarantine and they decide not to follow the orders. At this time, everybody in Story County has been very cooperative, and I actually expect them to be cooperative. But there might come that that situation, and if someone truly does have this and they start going around to the grocery store, that could be a public health emergency. So how can we do this if we need to? Because if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, it's going to be needed pretty quickly. So my big question for Ethan, if he can answer, as we read these codes, especially the quarantine codes, it seems like we can give an emergency verbal order. But can that be given by only one member of the Board of Health, that we decide who it can be? And then we have to meet within 24 hours to confirm it or formalize it. Is that an option?
I don't believe so. If you look at 137.104, that sets out the general powers of the Board of Health.
Mm-hmm.
But then I attached 105. So if you look at 105, down near the end, it talks about meetings.
Yep.
And it specifically requires for any action Board of Health, it is necessary for a quorum to come to a decision and vote up or down on the numbers of members present or quorum. So there is not a mechanism that I can identify for kind of emergency action other than that. And then the recent IPIP guidance from their, I didn't attach that, but it's the March 11th, 2020 news release from IPIP that talks about having electronic meetings. And these are the emergency meetings where it's not practical or it's impossible to provide 24 hours notice. So what I would envision is that happening, an electronic meeting being called if people don't have the time to meet, and then a vote occurring, and then the action being approved. And again, if we look at that administrative code section 641 that attached, it's interesting. It's not as a nimble or a flexible thing as you're kind of envisioning,
right.
Unfortunately.
Okay.
It seems to be a more restricted action, and you can see that in some of those sections there, especially under 112.6. So you can get there, and you're going to have to do a written order. So if you're going to do a written order, it has to contemplate certain things, and you're designating who is to be isolated or quarantined. So you're
right.
Naming an individual.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a confidentiality thing because it's a quarantine situation. And then you have to, that can be at a private home. But then number three, you'd have to do the health status of all isolated or quarantined individuals. That's 112.4 sub C. So you see that in sub C, you have to monitor the health status. And then under 112.4F, the Board of Health has to provide adequate food,
right.
Clothing, shelter, means of communicating with the outside world, and competent medical care. And then under 112.4H, the Board of Health would also have to provide religious and cultural accommodations for belief systems. What I see here in this section is legal due process. This is the due process. If you're going to isolate someone, quarantine them, cut them off from society, you have to provide this and make these written findings in an order, and then it'd be on me working with you to serve this on them in the rules as provided in the civil procedure. So it's not a real flexible tool. It is a tool the Board of Health has, but it's not very flexible.
I understand what the requirements for quarantine are, and I've read that. And I also understand that we have to have a written order, but I also understand, too, that there can be a verbal order given initially.
Okay.
And then, but it just has to be followed with a written order, at least what I've kind of read. And I'm assuming, and Les, who's from our public health department, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is part of one of the things of when someone is in quarantine, that is part of your responsibility to make sure that they're healthy and food is given to them, and that they have, you know, all the things that Ethan talked about. So, and you're nodding yes, so, yep. So if we can, so I guess I'm trying to anticipate, and I hope this will never happen, but if it takes a quorum from us to give a verbal order, can we all get on the phone, three of us, get on the phone agree with the verbal order and then meet within the next 24 hours to formalize it.
Yeah. Yes, so you'd have the electronic meeting with the guidance as put by Public Information Board, and it had to be a quorum, so you'd have to have at least three of you online. Is there six?
Five of us, so there has to be three of us.
Yeah, it has to be three.
Yeah.
And then you reconvene as soon as possible to have the emergency order, and we've given legal advice to the sheriff's office enforcing this under 139A. And so it would be a simple misdemeanor under 139A, and it states in there that the sheriff shall enforce those rules and regulations of the Board of Health. So if this order is issued by the Board of Health under 139A, the sheriff shall enforce that order.
Okay.
I have a process question, and I don't know if Les would have it or if Heather would be on the phone. I would anticipate that you're not going to quarantine someone unless it is brought to us by probably public health.
Right.
With that, then, what are some of the protocols that you go through first that would then bring it to the Board of Health? No, she needs to go to this one because you can't hear. No, it does work, but the people on the phone can't hear it. We tested that out earlier. So, sorry.
Les White, Story County Public Health. It would be, trying to envision this, we would at first make many attempts, I mean more than one attempt, to explain to the individual the importance of the quarantine and the reasons for that.
For them to self-quarantine, you mean?
Yes.
I mean voluntarily quarantine.
Yes.
Before
yes. Yep. Yeah.
So do you want to know what they do to put someone in voluntary quarantine?
No.
Or?
So if you're, if okay. you're doing mm-hmm. that, so mm-hmm. what, I'm kind of wondering what all you would do before you would come to say, we need to mm-hmm. move forward with
your
legal process.
Correct. What I envision is we would ask those questions. I mean, we would talk with the individual. We would, you know, monitor them, which we do every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't follow that, then that would be a point where I would come to the Board of Health and say, this individual is not following our protocols in relationship to self-quarantine. I don't even know, I mean, if we would give it a couple days. I mean, I know we would try to contact them at various times during the day. It could be such that we would go to their home. I would envision us going there and, again, giving them the stipulations of why this is important and what we need to, why you need to do this and the importance of it. So it wouldn't just be all of a sudden.
Sure.
We would make several attempts to make sure that this individual understood the process and why it was important.
Okay.
And I would share all of whatever we had done. That would be well documented,
right.
What our process is, how we had done it, and then I would bring that to the Board of Health.
So that my other question is either going to go to you or Ethan, not sure. So if you bring it forward that this is something that needs to be done, and kind of going off with Dr. Passions, mm-hmm. that is, you know, can you verbally do it or electronically say, yes, we want to quarantine this person. When does the legal documentation, you know, because I'm assuming you got to have the written order, but.
City.
I mean, would we have to, like, call you, like, right away, or is it, like, the next day if you have the meeting to have a more complete, or not complete, but, you know, a in-person meeting or?
Yeah, I would think past orders of the Board of Health, we've drafted based upon what the Board has done in the meeting. So the Board is making the following findings and saying, here's what we find. We order that John Doe is quarantined at 123 Main Street. We order that pursuant to Iowa Code 137, and you just go down through the list. And then, yeah, I could type that up and then we'd circulate it back for signature once it's been voted on, the meeting is approved. We'd bring it back for signature, and chair would sign it.
So I guess that if it would come before either the entire board or the majority of the board quorum, would they need to contact you right away? Is what I'm saying.
I would like to be involved right at the beginning rolling. So I can help with the legal due process.
Gotcha.
Got it.
And we're on call and we're accessible 24/7.
John,
yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
Isn't this completely outlined in section 112.6?
Yeah, it is. But what we're trying to get, what we're trying to figure out is the actual mechanics of doing it. You know, like how we're going about doing it. And just the fact that the Story County Attorney's Office wants to be involved in the beginning, that's one thing we need to know. Okay?
Correct. Yes.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess one other question to Ethan. So if they would have an electronic meeting, whether phone calls or whatever, usually when we have our board meetings, we have Stephanie who takes the minutes. So what would be needed if you're having that electronic meet, that phone call or whatever, can you just designate one of the board members to say, hey, I'll take the minutes, you know, so you've got the date, the time, who made the motions, you know, what was the motion, everything, and then provide that, maybe give it then to Stephanie to then type up nicely or whatever so that we have it?
Yes, yeah, there's an obligation under those, there's 1, 2, and 3, public access must be available. Notice must be followed as much as is reasonable. And the minutes must be kept of that meeting. So, yeah, practically or pragmatically, our office has offered advice on this in the past. I can't remember off the top of my head what our discussion was, but I believe if Stephanie was unavailable, that if I was on the call, I could keep minutes, or one of the board members could keep minutes. As long as you're documenting all the everything you need to document, the motions carried, the tallies of the votes.
Okay.
But otherwise, they could contact me so I could call in as well.
Yeah, but I think Superintendent is asking if you're unavailable.
Right.
If it's truly an emergency, it's 2 a.m. and we're trying to do this.
Doesn't sound like that's probably going to be the case.
Right. We should know a couple days in advance.
Right. Exactly. So. Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Okay. So did that all make sense to everybody? So what we're talking about is the ability to make an emergency order. It can be a verbal order, but it still requires a quorum of the Board of Health to do it. And the meeting can be electronic. We can just be on the phone with each other and do it that way. Someone has to take minutes. And, you know, if I'm there, it's just someone has to just make sure that we document it, and we can do that. So that will need to be done. So how do we go about doing this? The first person to get called to get this rolling would probably be me. If I wasn't an available, Mark?
Yep.
Correct? You'd be the second one to be called. And then who wants to be third?
I can.
Molly? Okay. Who wants to be fourth? John Kluge. All right, Louisa, looks like you're fifth.
Okay, I guess I end up five.
You're number five. Okay. And we just have to kind of keep in mind that Story County Attorneys wants to be involved, even if it's at night, and we'll try to get Stephanie involved also. And then the other thing will need to be done when this happens is we're going to have to work on setting up a meeting in 24 hours, public notice and everything. Okay? All right. Okay, so... Well, we can do this after the meeting, but before, especially you, Louisa, sign off, we need to make sure everyone has each other's phone number. Okay, I think I've got most of everybody's,
okay. But
we have to double check.
Could we make sure that Stephanie has it, and could you just send it out to the board?
She has it all.
That might be easier. That way then
okay, great.
You got it, and she can email that out to everybody.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. So the proposal right now is that if we have to make an emergency order, that the first person will be contacted will be me, then Mark Speck, then Molly Lee, then John Kluge, and then if they cannot be contacted, and then Louisa, whose last name I never can say. And
Yeah.
And that will be
the
order that we get contacted.
Dr. Hashin, so will whomever would be, like, if you're the first person in contact or if you're not available, Mark, who's going to make sure that Ethan knows then? So
the person who gets contacted, who's the one who starts this cycle, will need to do all those next steps.
Okay.
So when you send that list out, make sure you have Ethan's number on that list, the phone numbers.
Yeah. Or who we can call on call.
Or your on-call.
Or on-call train number I put on there.
Yeah. Good. Great. Okay. Great. So that's the proposal. Any further questions about it? Discussions? Okay. So can I make a move to approve it?
So moved.
Like second? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay. All right. Very good. So we've got that down. Okay. All right. Okay, next item we'd like to talk about is, and Louisa, I'll need your help with this, discussion and consideration of shelter in place for Story County. Hello? So what do you mean by that? Why you want to talk about that?
Okay. Yes, I did. What I'm thinking is within the next week, we will have a lot of students and families coming back into Iowa. The total approximate college population of students is 70,000 in Iowa. Let's say 10% with their families elsewhere and coming back. That means 7,000 people. That's not counting the small colleges in the state of Iowa. So what I'm thinking now already with the increase, and I'm a data person, so I love to graph things and look at it, and there is a considerable exponential increase in Iowa over a short period of time. And I graphed it out. I haven't looked at if there is an inflection point, which means the point of the curve where it starts to decrease. I haven't seen that yet. So the thing is, I am worried that within the next week or two, we have lots and lots of positive cases in Iowa and perhaps all university towns. And that's what I'm worried about, if we really need to consider a shelter in place, if that is called for. I know I listened to the governor's press briefing this afternoon, and she has decided not yet, but is looking at the data from the IDPH. But I'm still worried about it.
So,
and that's why I brought that up.
Okay. So shelter in place is basically an order that says that people should stay home. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Shelter in place means stay home, but essential errands can still be run to the grocery store, the drug store, get gas, things like that. Post maybe drop mail off at the post office. That can still be done. But mostly stay in place. What I am worried about with a shelter in place order is people that are working on construction and, you know, those kind of jobs.
Right.
Because perhaps it wouldn't be, you know, less than 10 people working there. And that is the downside of that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of construction going on in Story County and other counties for sure also. But that's basically what I was worried about and considering.
So is it? It's my understanding that the students, they're not coming back now in the 2 week period. They're going to do everything.
Coming back to empty the dormitories.
They are coming back. They have to move out all their stuff out of the dormitory, and there is a deadline for that. Mm.
Okay.
Has
any other county done this? No one has pulled that plug yet?
And I don't know, I mean, we'd like to have Ethan come up. I don't know that a county can. I think that may have to come from the governor's level. Other counties, like I know Polk County and Johnson County, have submitted letters or kind of notification encouraging people to voluntarily take certain precautions, stay home if you can, limit your movements, wash your hands, all other best practices. But they haven't done anything like a shelter in place consideration. Like I said, Ethan might have to, could provide more of that legal stance on it, but I don't know that a county can do it. None of the counties that I have seen have done it yet. And I reached out to Matt McCoy, who's a supervisor down in Des Moines, and reached out to, I got a letter from, I think it was Linn County and Johnson County, that they have just done best practices.
Okay, so Johnson County, that has the most cases, has not done it.
Right. I don't believe, I know I got one from Linn County. I'm just trying to recall right now if I got it from Johnson County as well, but no, I may have not seen anything from Johnson County as well.
So I think from that meeting we had the other day, that emergency, it's the word shall.
Is big.
Another thing I think some counties are doing are writing letters or recommending to the governor to put on a statewide emergency.
Right.
So that's something boards of supervisors in other countries are having that as a output, I guess. But it's a letter for pushing the governor to do that.
I couldn't identify any explicit authority authorizing a shelter in place. You may interpret 112.3A as a voluntary request. You could potentially say we'd like you, residents of Ames, to voluntarily confine yourselves. There's no teeth behind it. There's no enforcement behind it. It's just a request. Other than that, I could identify no other authority in 104 that would authorize the Board of Health to issue a shelter-in-place order.
Could we, if we decide, issue, like you said, just a recommendation if the Board of Health decides that? But like you said, it'll have no teeth.
Yeah. It'd just be the board may request an individual or a group of individuals voluntarily confine themselves to a private home or other facility. I mean, that's the only thing I can see.
Yeah.
I guess you could issue a statement like that out to the people in Story County if it comes to that.
I kind of have a little, I understand, Louisa, what you're saying, and I think you're absolutely right in many respects. And I do think we're going to see an increase in cases. Tell you the truth, I kind of have a little bit of a hard time taking that step if we don't have a little bit more guidance from the governor's office.
I agree. Okay. We need more guidance from the EPA and the governor. Yes.
Right. But I think it's something that we should kind of keep in our back pocket. And remember, we're going to have another meeting in about another 10 days or so. And this, I think, one of our agenda items will always be, the COVID situation. And I think this is something that we should kind of keep in the back of our mind.
And if you would like, I can forward you the couple of articles that I've seen from the other counties of what they've done, just so that you have.
That would be nice to see that.
See what they have.
Okay.
Whether you want to do anything, any type of letter or not, that's up to the board to make that determination, but at least you can see what some of the other areas have done.
Hopefully these students that are coming, if they would have gotten in contact with this, they would have had it by, they would have symptoms by now before they get here, and hopefully they...
14 days.
Yeah, so it's...
So they're right just at. Coming back this week.
Well, talking about students, they don't follow the rules.
They're kind of in a mandatory situation. They have to get everything out of their clothing.
Right. Yep. Okay.
And I think the other thing you have to remember, there are also people that are positive and they're not showing any symptoms as
right.
well. So
yeah.
you can't focus on just having a fever or other ailments. Right.
And then kind of what was referenced earlier.
And that's what, okay, and that's what worries me with the younger people. You know, they might ignore maybe a fever or a cough. And then just keep right on going until they get really sick, and you know, or could be asymptomatic carriers. That's my major worry about it. And it would be really good if you could forward the information, like from Johnson County, where they have the most cases. That would be really helpful, I would think, what the county has done there.
Yeah, and like I said, Louisa, I'll have to look. I cannot recall if the letter that was submitted to the governor, if it was Johnson or Linn County, but it's right in that surrounding area. But I will take a look and provide that to you.
And I was just going to say another consideration when we are thinking about a shelter in place is all those essential services and who are and aren't. Everyone is, all the different industries are going to be asking, am I an essential service? So that's kind of a trickle-down effect that has to be known so that that guidance can be issued.
That's right. That's a good point. Yeah, I'd really like a little bit more guidance before we'd ever pull anything like that. So, okay. All right. Okay, any other discussion on shelter in place right now? No motion?
No.
Okay, sounds good. All right, next item let's talk about, and review and discussion of protocol for entering into a closed session during a public meeting. So the reason I put this on here was there may or may not come a time that personal information is being shared with the Board of Health about somebody who's COVID positive. And do we put that in, do we put the meeting into a closed session so we can discuss that and continue to follow HIPAA requirements? The only way I could anticipate this is if Les has to share with us that somebody works at Walmart and they live in Slater, and that, you know, we've got issues with that, because right now the Iowa Department of Public Health is not giving any of that information out. The only thing they're telling us is if they're male or female and an approximate age range, and that's all. So Les, if you can I ask you, do you think there'd ever be an indication where you would have to discuss with us something that would be not, so that you would not be able to identify them as so-and-so X? Do you think there'd be any type of situation where there might be necessary?
Well, we had to quarantine. So
yeah, I was just
sure
thinking
would.
The quarantine.
Don't want to, yeah. Otherwise, we can't pick up the audio.
My first thought was the quarantine order.
So if we actually go to that quarantine order, then we have to have a closed meeting.
I don't know.
See, that's just it. That's okay.
I think that's all public.
Yeah.
So then it becomes public.
So then it becomes public.
Yes, under 641, 1.17. A report or other information identifying individual exposed or infected with reportable disease is confidential and shall not be accessible to the public. But then it goes through A through F exceptions. An exception is reportable disease information may be included in a quarantine or isolation order or placard as necessary to prevent the spread of a quarantinable disease.
Oh.
So if you're going to be doing
yeah.
an isolation or quarantine, you're required in the order to say John Doe, address,
yeah,
and post it in the order.
Okay.
Which section is that?
That's Iowa Administrative Code 641.1.17. So a couple sections, I didn't include it. I just included what I sent you. I can.
It was in the packet that we had at our last meeting.
Right.
If you grab one of those, it's all the administrative codes in there.
And I can forward that out after the meeting tonight. Okay.
So, Ethan, can I ask you a clarifying question based on that? So, if there was someone that they'd be looking at potentially quarantine, let's say we haven't, that we're here at a meeting and it's being brought to us, you know, Les walks in and says, I need to have this, could you then go into a closed meeting to discuss their reasoning for that and then come back to the open meeting to vote and then provide all that direction?
Yeah, I think that'd be a very considerate way to do it because, yeah, under 21.5, the closed session, you can only go into closed session for enumerated reasons, and one of them is to review or discuss records which are required or authorized by state or federal law to be kept confidential. So HIPAA information would be a state law, federal law requiring confidentiality. But then at the point the board is deciding to isolate or quarantine, and they're taking action in open session, the individual will be identified.
So when we're discussing the quarantine order, we might want to close the meeting, but when we give the quarantine order or vote on it, it has to open up.
Yeah, I would recommend the agenda would say something, closed session, the board may go into closed session pursuant to 641.1.17 and Iowa Code 21.5 to discuss someone's federally or state law protected confidential information, and then take an affirmative vote of the board to go into closed session. Closed session basics are you cannot take any action in closed session. So you discuss what you want to do, and then you come back out here in open session, make the motion and take the action. And at that point, the person's identity, if the quarantine is followed, would be disclosed.
Got it.
So
if no quarantine is voted on, then the person's name is never disclosed.
You wouldn't discuss what you're going to do in closed session. You would just hear the merits of the reasoning why.
And then the discussion
why
deliberation.
And then you have the discussion deliberation here.
Yes.
So
it would be uncertain what the outcome is until you're back out here.
Okay. So that would be a good reason to do it. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
So you could, and I think you'd also have to look at the benefit of you're just hearing it. Would you want to hear it in that open session? I mean, does it make sense, or is it better to be in that closed session where you're just hearing that general information before you come out and deliberate yes or no?
Right. What we would do is we'd be able to ask Les, as a Board of Health, specific questions. She would answer them. We would get the information we need, but we would not discuss it until we came out of session.
And we'd do that in a closed session.
Yeah.
No, the information would be given to us in a closed
session.
Right,
that's what I mean.
But the discussion would be an open session.
Discussion, deliberation, action takes place in an open session.
In an open session. Okay, so that would be the reason.
So that way, if they denied my request,
the name's never out.
We never say it. But we still know the information.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a question for Les. So when these people are in quarantine, they're self-quarantined now.
Correct.
How often do you check on them?
Daily.
Just once a day?
Twice a day.
Twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know what happened between those when you called and the next time you called. You don't know what. So it's just twice a day.
No, we don't. Yeah. We talk to them twice a day, get their temperature twice a day.
Mm-hmm. So naturally they're supposed to stay at home. I suppose that's one of the questions you ask them if they
see. That is, exactly. Yes. And we really have some real thorough information that we provide to them when we do put them under self-quarantine. And we talk about they'll reporting their temperature to us both morning and afternoon. I will tell you if that one of those was missed, then that's we would immediately follow up and figure out what happened. And visit with them about that.
But, so they're not even allowed to go get groceries when they're self-quarantined, right?
We encourage them to order online, have the groceries delivered outside the door, and then they can go pick them up.
Okay.
We have, you know, a lot of that kind of information is stuff that we provide to them when we first visit with them about what's going on.
Okay. And most people have been cooperative. I mean, you only had
two. We've only had two. But we have had other people, you know, under quarantine, and they've all been very cooperative.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. So that actually...
John, I do have a question.
Please.
If I may ask. So quarantine, the name quarantine really refers to somebody who tests positive or could be positive or a family member is positive, correct? That's why the word quarantine is used, the term quarantine, isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct. It could be either a positive case or it could be a case. We encourage them to self-quarantine themselves if they've been exposed to a positive COVID-19 person. For instance, if you have two members in the household, you would encourage that other member of the household to monitor their temperature and to stay home as well.
Thus, would they also potentially self-quarantine, voluntary quarantine, while waiting for testing? So they may not be positive
yet. That's correct. That's
another
reason.
They don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't know yet, so they're waiting for the results.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's still taking like 3 days to get the test back after you about here?
Actually, it depends on where you send it, and Dr. Passion probably knows as well as anybody, but if you send it to the hygienic lab here in the state, we are getting pretty good within 24, 48 hours.
Oh, okay, good.
But if you send it, and there are specific guidelines related to the hygienic lab here in the state that they have to follow, the provider has to order it and justify these guidelines, and then... But if, let's say, Dr. Passion would decide, you know what, Jane Doe, I'd like to test her because I feel like this would be good, he can do so, but he has to send it to a reference lab. I will tell you that is taking about 4 to 5 days.
So how do you get them to go to the Iowa City and get tested?
You have to meet certain criteria that are laid out by the Iowa Department of Public Health. Mm-hmm. And
what is that? I mean, is it... Certain symptoms, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Sickness, age is in there. Mm-hmm. If you're a...
Hospitalized. They did recently just add essential personnel, which would include healthcare workers. So if they have symptoms, then they can be tested. I think that was the newest one that was just added.
And of interest is they took out the travel issue.
Yes, they did.
They took it out.
Uh-huh. But we do ask if you have traveled outside the state of Iowa.
Yeah, too.
But as far as the criteria, they took out that. Anything else?
Right. Lisa, did you get your question answered?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. All right. Okay, the next thing I'd like to talk about, is it time? Can we do the thing that we approved on the agenda? Discussion and consideration of revised temporary employment practices and policy related to COVID-19. Want to talk about that now?
This thing.
Right. So in front of you, what you see is something that was passed by the Board of Supervisors, and that we need to approve it.
Yeah.
Okay. And the biggest things are these things that are in yellow are the changes that are made.
Well, I'm not sure. Right? Did you approve this? I'm not sure if you did. They approve this at all, Stephanie? Have you guys approved this?
Or do we have to
all?
Just know? Yeah, I don't.
I thought we already did.
The new things are within yellow,
right.
And that
was
brought before us today at the Board of Supervisors table today. So
we approved something from the Board of Supervisors.
What I was asking.
Because it's usually the other way around.
Yes, but you need to adopt this.
Oh, adopt it.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, that's what you're doing. Is you're
adopting it.
Yes, you're adopting.
Oh, okay.
So what's in yellow is what you've added.
Yep.
You've added that.
As of today, what's in yellow is what we added today.
So you already had some of this out there.
Friday.
Yes.
So we did this just on Friday, and then already for today we just did this. So this is I think this is new all around for you. The whole document is new. But what Stephanie highlighted was what we just did today.
Got it.
So it's the whole document to adopt, approve, adopt.
And there's also something in the agenda that says, in any future amendments made to the temporary policy by the Board of Supervisors. So what they're asking for us to do is approve this, temporary employment practices and policies in response to the novel coronavirus pandemic. And it's also asking us to approve any future amendments that the Board of Supervisors approves.
So that doesn't have to continue to be brought to you. It's ever evolving. We get new information,
right.
Depending what federal legislation has done, that's what caused us to put this together.
And as we all know, this is a real changing environment. And I know what you're asking. Okay?
So moved.
Okay. Do you have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. So I need a motion to approve the temporary employment practices and policies in response to the novel coronavirus pandemic, as well as any future amendments made to the temporary policy by the Board of Supervisors. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Okay, it's approved. Thank you. Okay, all right. Next thing we have to discuss, how are we gonna run our meetings from here on out? Do we have to, should we move to a completely electronic meeting and have people be able to call in? Do you want us to continue to, some of us come and we limit the amount of people that we have in the room? You know, like we can do things like have Denise Denton, instead of being physically here to give her report, she could get us information and then we could have her on the line to ask us questions and we could ask her questions and she could talk to us, but she wouldn't physically be here. I want to know your guys' thoughts about how you feel. I know that Ames City Council, I just read, has gone to completely electronic meetings. And Louisa has done the last couple of meetings that we've had on it. So,
right. Yeah.
So, and it seems like it's working okay once you get good electronics, right?
Yes, it works fine.
Okay.
Today it works really good.
Good, good. So, what's your thoughts?
I would rather meet like we're doing right now.
I would support electronic meetings.
Mark?
I can go either way. I don't really have an opinion at this time, anyway.
Would we be willing to do, will we give it the option of people if they want to make it electronic? Or do you think, I don't know, it's kind of a tough call. You know,
that's what we're doing now. I mean,
right.
Louisa is doing it.
Right.
Maybe make it optional. At least for me, I have to do it electronically, but maybe in the future it might change for others as well. I don't know.
Would we, to decrease our exposure, because sometimes we'll have three or four people talking to us at this meeting, would we have them do that electronically, or would we have them, like I'm thinking of Margaret, when she comes in, should we have her give a report and then have her leave?
That'd be fine.
Is there a way, Stephanie, that we could do those slides like they did with the meeting with Keith Morgan so that anyone at home could see the slides?
That worked really good for me, but sometimes the audio wasn't good until you had your phone,
right.
And I could talk and hear things on the phone.
I think right now the only option we have is to email the PowerPoint ahead of time, prior to the meeting. Yeah, and
and have more Greg. I would not want to utilize up Keith's area because as things ever evolve, that may be highly utilized later at night, so certainly would not want to tie him on that. But we've done that with the board, is had folks that they're not coming to the meetings. We've, you know, that would do like their quarterly reports to send their PowerPoints to us. We can read it and then we can ask for questions, or you can have the person, Margaret or whomever, you're going to still have the meetings here. You could have her, she's emailed out the PowerPoint, she could talk to us about it, we could ask any questions, or she could call in. Yeah. Even
I could also print out her PowerPoint and provide that to you at the meeting.
I think it would be good to offer the option of electronic for presenters or board members, just because we're the Board of Health and we're recommending social distancing and everything. I think it enforces the message. I'm not against people coming in if that's what they prefer, though.
What we've done for our board, too, is we don't allow any more than 10 people come into our board. So if we have people in the building here who want to listen in on our Board of Supervisor meeting, if they call in. If they come up, we usually have somebody who's just kind of said, you know, showing we're at 10. Or someone will switch out. We've just really been trying to minimize the amount of people in this particular room.
But you haven't gone to a completely electronic meeting.
We have not yet. Again, things are evolving, so you don't know when that might occur. We could be by next week.
I have to kind of defer on this decision because I'm not very good at electronics. I can get on a computer, and I certainly can call in, and I've done enough webinars, and I feel like I could handle it and stuff. But like telemedicine, which they're encouraging us to do at McFarland Clinic, I'm kind of, you know, let someone else do it, you know? I'd rather, you know, see my patients. But that's me, you know? So why don't we do this? Why don't we, especially for our next meeting, why don't we make it an option to do this electronically, and that we will also encourage any presenters to get all their information to us beforehand, and that they be available electronically.
Yes, I think that's a good option.
Right.
I still think Zoom or WebEx would be really good. You know, with Zoom, one can have 10 people, and one can see everyone talking, but you have to have iPad or a phone or a computer.
Can't do that here.
Yeah.
RIT has been working on that.
The what?
RIT department.
They've been working on something, but we're not there yet. So this is our only mechanism right now.
Okay. So let's do that for now. And again, it's a changing environment, and we may really change this. And then we will encourage any presenters to get all their information to us and to be available online. And we will, and I anticipate that we will have them call in. And then, or we'll call them and say...
Yeah, they would need to call in.
They can call in. And then we say, okay, Denise Denton, are you there?
Yes.
And then can you give your presentation and anything you want to talk about? And then she can get off the phone. Okay?
You can also look at, too, the board could look at who are to be your presenters at your next meeting. And is that something you want? Is that something that can hold off to the next month's meeting, or do you want it done right now? I mean, just you've got a variety of options to look at too.
It would be, but if they do it electronically, it'll be okay.
And regardless, we would have to record because these are public meetings. So either I would always be here, or probably Stephanie, or we're also looking at the potential future wise if we're. Need to have the meetings over in Ames, but make sure we can do all the recording. Again, there's some other just feasibility things that we're looking at yet.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's what we'll do. Okay. We don't need to vote on that.
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Final thing, and I think this last one is for me to discuss at least my vision of what Story County is doing right now for COVID. First of all, as probably all of you are aware, the hospital, Mary Greeley Medical Center, is no longer doing elective procedures, which is life and death procedures. They're pretty strict. And it's I know orthopedic doctors who are trying to get knees on, and they go, nope, they're not doing it. And the major reason they're doing it for two different reasons. One is we have to maintain a good supply of ventilators. And in other parts in the country, they talk about running low on ventilators. So we don't want a ventilator being used for a surgical procedure when it may have to be used for a patient that's getting sick very quickly. And apparently with this COVID, when they go down, they can go down real quickly. And the ER doctor is... The ER doctors talk to us about how people will come into the emergency room, and within an hour or two, I mean, they're just breathing hard when they come into the emergency room. Within an hour or two, they're on a ventilator. So it's a real concern. Also, it's a concern of conserving personal protective equipment, and anytime you do a surgery, it's a big issue. There are protocols being worked on about how to handle people with COVID when they come into the hospital. A lot of them are still in the work in process. We do have a protocol for what to do with a woman who's COVID positive who delivers a baby. So there's that in there. They have limited the doors that you can come into at Mary Greeley. There's only about three of them now. And at each one of them, they're manned from 6 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock at night, and they will take your temperature and ask you some questions and give you a little marker. At the but again, that's going to change too. It'll continue to evolve. At McFarland Clinic, we're starting to screen everyone who comes into our clinics, especially to the main clinic. We only have two doors open at McFarland Clinic, that all staff, all providers, everyone has to go through. They screen us, ask us questions, give us a little tag for the day so they don't have to keep rescreening us. The other thing that is just being developed is we're calling it a URI clinic, but it's basically a sick clinic. We're trying to get all our patients who are clinically ill with a possible communicative disease to North Ames and screening people so that the only people being seen at the clinic, the big clinic, is people who are well, coming in for their injury follow-up, lacerations, okay, simple things that are not felt to be communicative, and the people who are at all sick or possibly communicative are going to another location, North Ames. So we'll see how that works. We're just getting that set up. Today was the first day.
They don't require people putting on a mask?
I don't know. I haven't been out there, and I don't know all the specifics. Main clinics. Well, actually, if you've got a cough and cold, now they want you to go up there.
Oh, up there.
Yeah.
To get a test or something.
Nah, just to be seen.
So what, you know,
the way we're looking at tests are, and at that last webinar from the Iowa Department of Public Health on Sunday, they had really good advice when people are calling up and asking, well, I think I might have COVID. Can I get tested? And our answer to them is, well, are you sick with it? Are you doing okay? Then stay home. Kind of like chicken pox. When we used to get chicken pox, we would get a call from a parent saying, my child has chicken pox, I want to be seen. And we would tell them, no, wait, how are they doing? This is what you do at home. Don't come into the office, you know. And so I think that's a really good common sense approach. You know, people will say, I'm afraid I have COVID, I want to come in and be seen. Well, are you doing okay? Stay at home. And there's if you call up to the clinic, you're going to get a whole different set of options for you.
So if you're coming into the main clinic, say, to follow up on a cut or get stitches out,
well,
are you requiring that person to put on a mask?
No, not unless they're cough or colds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, the providers, many of them are wearing masks and gowning up to protect our patients, but also to protect us, because as Lisa brought up, a lot of people don't have symptoms. But we think that this is the best thing we can do. In our department in pediatrics, we're still seeing well children, and with the taking away of people who are ill, because almost all that we see are ill will be going up to the URI clinic, we will probably start seeing more patients for their well visits, as long as they're well, than we initially planned. So we're still open for business, we're still giving immunizations, we're still doing well visits. And we're seeing people who, for injuries, and if they don't have a fever, we'll see them. Don't have a cold, don't have a cough. So those are the big things that are happening.
Tom, when you said, when you said North Age, you mean the North McFarland Clinic?
Yes, the North McFarland Clinic, the one by the Fairway, the new Fairway.
Yeah.
And that building, I was out there on Sunday, that building has a lot of potential for space to be used appropriately. They have a big physical therapy department where it's not shut off rooms, but certainly people could be behind curtains. We made a decision not to put the kids down there because there's no way a four-year-old will stay behind a curtain. So,
yeah.
but that could certainly be something that could be expanded to. I personally think it's a good plan.
Okay.
It's also a plan that has been proposed by virtually every other medical community that's dealing with this. You know, we've already gotten our second case, and they're gonna keep adding up. And the only way we can kind of stop this is by taking it seriously and staying at home, washing hands, wearing masks when you need to. So we're doing our best. So. Any questions at all about that? Okay.
Has anybody looked at surge capacity for hospital beds in Story County?
You know, that's a good question. I know they're looking at it, but I do not know what they've said. I do know that our Story County Medical Center, CMS, has taken off the restrictions for bed capacity to remain a critical care access hospitals, and also have taken away the requirements for only a limited amount of stay. So there may be a role for Story County Medical Center if we get hit with this hard. But I'm not sure what that will be yet. But I do know that the CMS...
We have all these empty dormitory rooms sitting up.
It could be too, yep. Yeah. Yes?
I didn't know it's research capacity.
Oh, well. Very good. I'll learn something.
The answer is yes. I will tell you, too, I know Mary Greeley Medical Center, our incident command, is in process, and we do meet daily. Story County Medical, their incident command is in place as well. And one of the groups related in our incident command center is related to surge capacity, and they are fine-tuning that. So that they know how to be able to handle what's coming our direction. So people are looking at those things.
Great, thank you.
Hopefully we won't need to go there.
You know, in many respects, we've been able to watch the East and West Coast and see what they go through. And so we're learning from them. And it's kind of nice to be in the hinterland, you know? It's nice to be a flyover state in many respects. Okay. So, all right. Okay, so that's all on our agenda. Right now, I'd like to know if anyone has any, does anyone wish to make any statements? Lisa Heddens? Mark Speck?
I have nothing.
Molly Lee?
No.
Mark Speck? Or John Luby? Okay, Louisa?
Yeah, just one question. Were there any handouts today at the meeting?
The only handout was the that thing about the temporary employment practices and policies in response to the novel coronavirus pandemic. You want a copy of it?
Yes, please.
Oh,
could that be
email?
Email.
No, it already has been, apparently.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that was the email. Okay. Yeah.
That was the email. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. And then, all right. And if no one objects, I have nothing to say. So if no one objects, I would like to adjourn this meeting.
I move to adjourn.
Okay. And meeting's adjourned.